I'm confident that pound for pound, we have the best installation group in the entire industry. Our installers are the best. I'm very confident in that because we have made this the best place to work if you're an installer.
This is the Solar Disruption Theory.
Welcome back to another episode of the Solar Disruption Theory podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chad Towner. And with us today, we've got a very special guest. His name is Danny Rubin. He's the VP of Field Ops for Freedom Forever. Danny Rubin, how you doing? Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
I'd like for you to start this podcast the same way you start every call. Let's hear it.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Solar Disruption Theory podcast.
There it is.
Glad to be here.
There it is.
Like, that's not really a special thing to say. It's pretty normal.
But you're very well known for it. So what's up, y'all? Welcome and thank you for joining. Danny, I've been wanting to do this podcast with you for a long time because obviously you've had a massive impact on Freedom and our growth and our ability to install record-breaking KW every single month. But, you know, you've been in the solar industry for so long. You've seen so many different things. And so I've just always wanted to get your story out there. I want to get right into it. Like, where did you come from? How did you get into the solar industry? What is your background?
I've been in the industry since 2007. I kind of fell into it. I graduated school and moved to Colorado and was like, I want to build green LEED buildings. I didn't really know what that meant. I had heard of LEED. I had heard of green building and wasn't thinking solar, wasn't thinking anything, like packed my car, moved out west and attended this, I think it was called the Build Green Colorado Conference in like 2007. Hmm. And I had like a stack of paper resumes in my pocket and introduced myself to like, I don't know, 100 people, handed them my resume that was like crumpled and folded up and was just like, hey, can I take you to lunch? Hear your story, how you got into this industry. And I just like ended up meeting a guy who was a developer, but was starting a solar company. And all of a sudden, like a couple days later, I was living in Boulder, Colorado, and I was interning for this company, like who was gonna, you know, we were gonna build solar and on apartment buildings and do all these things. And it was cool. I did that for a little bit, but then I quickly took a job installing for a larger company in Colorado. And that was my first time getting in kind of the installation world, doing residential specifically.
So when you first got into solar and you first kind of started doing the installations, what was the landscape like? Like, I think back in 2007, you know, 16 years ago, the solar industry has evolved a ton and it has a lot more evolving ahead of it. But like, that was solar in its infancy. You know, I think some of the early solar companies were really starting in around that time. So like, people had to have had no clue what the heck you were even installing. Like, what was the landscape like of the solar business?
I think people had some clue, but yeah, Colorado, there was like New Jersey, Colorado, California, Arizona was starting to become a thing. Like, it was just the industry always existed, but it was very grassroots and smaller. And there was larger companies coming to be. I gained so much respect for the product in terms of how the system gets put on a roof.
Yeah.
You know, I had never built anything before. I got all of my construction experience on a solar job site. And so we, you know, I have so much respect for the people who do the thing that we give to a customer, right? Who go out and build these projects every day. And I work obviously a lot with that team. And, you know, the level of installer that we have here today just like didn't exist, right? There was like, we would be happy if we finished a project in a week and a half.
Oh, wow.
It just took longer. And, you know, we were doing things to ground panels and run copper from panel to panel that you just didn't have to do even a year or two later. And there was just a lot of innovation that consistently happened from the time I got into the industry to today. And it's continuing to happen. But for me, that was like the first big thing. It was like, this work is hard. It takes skill. And I was never the best at it. Like, I think I just kind of excelled at working with, you know, the leadership of like scheduling, project planning, talking to the customer, organizing the crew, making sure we had the stuff for the day. And that's kind of how I ended up coming into the operations management side. I just enjoyed moving those pieces together more. And I also wasn't a great installer. And I had so much respect for the people who did that. And I still do. And so I think the biggest thing when I think back to those days, like, I don't like when people call things the Wild West, but the safety culture of the solar industry today did not exist in 2007 and 2008, right? It just, like, you would put a rope on because it was just so steep that you felt you kind of needed it.
Yeah.
And it was more optional. And I think it's the level of quality of the systems we install today and just the check and balances of how that happens from just, like, internally at companies like us or externally through, like, HJs and inspectors, and just the safety piece.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, like, a week and a half install on a, you know,
you're like high-fiving after that.
I don't think our business could function on a week and a half install. We would literally need 10 times the amount of crews to operate at the scale that we are today. So I'm glad it evolved. I'm glad that it has come a long way. You talked about safety and quality. I think, you know, in today's climate, even still, there is a culture of, you know, just grow so fast and install at whatever cost and get the job done. Speed is everything. And from the sales perspective, because I've sold a lot of solar in the past, that is kind of the only thing that we think about. Like, we just don't really look at quality or safety. We just want the system on the roof. We want it to work and we want to move on to the next customer. And so I've definitely noticed that you guys have had a fundamental shift in the company when you and a lot of your associates started coming to Freedom.
My associates. That sounds like nefarious.
You and some of your, you know, you guys brought a lot of people to Freedom.
Yeah.
Right? You have a lot of connections from the industry, from the past that you guys brought over here. And you guys fundamentally kind of created this culture of quality and safety across the board in our company that I still don't think it exists in the rest of the industry, at least not to the level that you guys take it. What's the difference?
There's a lot to unpack there. I mean, first off, I think that's being super kind. I was just kind of, I didn't personally bring a ton of people here, right? Like, I'm super fortunate with the role I'm in, and, you know, Brian and Brett recruited me, which I'm very grateful for. And then, you know, there was already some really awesome people here. In the past few years since I've been here, we've grown a ton, and a lot of it's, like, you know, people recruiting each other.
Yeah.
Right. And I've taken a kind of a page over the years from how some of the sales channels works, you know, and there's really strong recruiting there. And a lot of that's happened organically. There's been, like, strategic moves if we go into a new state to get a certain person who might have followership in the right group. But so much of our growth has been developing people from within, right?
And
building a bench.
Why do we focus on quality?
So we say this a lot. We can do a lot of things and we can build the fastest projects ever.
Yeah.
We can skip a lot of steps to do it. And people can choose to do that. But it doesn't matter how many projects we build or how fast we build them or how much KW a crew or a warehouse or a branch does if the systems don't work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if a house burns down. It doesn't matter if somebody gets hurt. And so kind of the foundation of what we've built in terms of, like, an ops culture is built around quality, is built around safety. And that's a challenge because it's hard to balance the production with those things, but it's really important. We just wrapped up Safety Week, which is a huge thing for us here. Big shout out to Matt Yontos and his team who helped coordinate that and put that on every year. And we're doing the Quality Disruption Tour now with Dustin Hoskins and Dylan Robbins and their teams going to speak to every branch. And we're clearing the schedule for a day in every branch in the company and doing different stations, focusing on quality, focusing on training. I've seen companies maybe go the wrong direction in the past is just tell people to be better and not help. And some companies say, hey, safety is really important. When you start, you get thrown in a dark room somewhere and you watch a video of somebody for 30 minutes high-fiving about safety. Or you can, like, really build that into your culture with accountability, with training, with process. And we could just check the box, but we just want our people getting home safe every day. We don't want our employees getting hurt. We want them to have a sustainable career here where they can do this thing that they love doing and, you know, see growth professionally, see that professional development earn, because I think we're really competitive from a compensation standpoint, And the only ask is like, do it the right way.
Yeah.
If you get to the end of the job and something feels off, and while it could take longer, like we have to rework that and fix it for the customer and for, you know, for right. everybody.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because like in the solar landscape right now, the cost of capital has gone up so significantly that I think every finance company in solar right now is looking at all of their projects and they're saying, we have all these jobs that have been installed, but they're not getting to PTO. And those projects are a big liability on the finance company's balance sheets. And so they're looking at those and they're like, why aren't they getting to PTO? And I know it's been this huge, huge wave across the industry from a sales and even installer side, where there are these clawbacks that are coming. They're happening because projects are not getting to PTO fast enough. And my understanding is that if a job isn't getting to PTO, there's a good chance it wasn't done properly, or there was an issue with it. Not always, but my impression from all the finance companies we've spoke with and been that we work with, they tell us that we pound for pound have the best quality, have the lowest percentage of these projects that are in this bucket where they need to get clawed back. And that was the big moment for me to realize, man, you know, we don't just talk the talk from a quality and safety standpoint. This is living proof that you guys are doing a substantially better job at installing quality projects that are getting to PTO. We're not cutting corners. We're not skipping steps, right? A lot of companies love to lean forward and install before permit and all that other stuff. And you guys really do focus on making sure we do it the right way. And it's evidenced in the fact that we have this lower percentage of projects that are getting clawed back by finance companies.
Yeah. I don't think we're perfect. And I think there's always things we can improve on. And when we scale really fast, that's where the training comes into play. That's where like the, hey, you have to go back. You know, you add 10 crews over the course of 2 months. There's going to be some things that we need to go back and really evaluate. But I'm confident that pound for pound, like to quote you, like we have the best installation group in the entire industry. Our installers are the best. I'm very confident in that, because we have made this the best place to work if you're an installer. If you are very good at what you do, you have high quality, you're comfortable with a really strong safety program, and you do it well and efficiently and you plan well, this is the place, based off like how we compensate the install team, where you can make the most money, see the most growth, have the most balanced schedule, and be the happiest. And so I'm confident that we have the best installation group from the people in the field and the people managing those people. I'm confident that our branch managers who lead those teams and lead our permitting teams and our inspections teams and all these teams in the field, because there's somebody who has to show up every day, very early in the morning, open the building, make sure the crews have what they need, and we can have the best crews. But if you don't have the right person helping make sure they have all the other things they need, the projects on the schedule, the interaction with the customers, the inspections closed out, it won't work. Yeah. And those are the things that I think when I look at like our product is the system we deliver to the customer, but our product's also like, those are two critical groups of people that without this whole thing, it doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
And the install is such a memorable piece for the customer. It's everything.
Yeah.
If that crew takes time to show the customer where all the equipment's going to go, if they have to schedule a second day for any reason to communicate to them their schedule or let them know when they're leaving, all those things, you know, the language that's used on the roof, like we're not going to be perfect 100% of the time, but I think what we're really good is like course correcting when things happen. And I just am very confident that like our teams are the best in the industry at that.
Yeah. Every time I walk into one of the warehouses, it's a great way for me to remember and realize what it is that we're doing and how complex it can really be, and like the difficult job that these guys really have. Like I go into a warehouse and I see panels, I see equipment, I see trucks, I see trailers, I see tools. And there's people that have to organize that every single day,
totally.
Unbox things, package it up. There are people that have to clean out these trucks and trailers every single day,
get oil changes for those trucks.
Who's the guy who's greasing the forklift, right, to make sure that it's operational? Like, it blows my mind all of the things that are going on a daily basis, like filling up the freezer with those little ice pops.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just,
those are good.
Those are, some of them are good. Some of them, the grape one is good.
I like the green ones. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm a grape guy, but lots of electrolytes.
They have so many electrolytes in them.
But yeah. Like those, all those, it's the little things. And I notice them because I'm like, who is doing these things? But somehow it gets done, and it gets done so efficiently. And our warehouse is like spotless. And I sit down with the branch manager, and they know every project, and they tell me what the issues are that they're dealing with and how we can, like, they are on top. It's like its own little business.
Yeah.
And they are the boss of that business. And it blows my mind.
Yeah.
How efficient these people are.
I feel like sometimes I'm the guy who, you know, hey, there's the pile of junk in this corner. When was the last time that truck had that oil change? Because it's like become so tactical.
Yeah.
And I always try to take a step back and just appreciate, man, this is such a hard job. And it's so impressive what these people do, because they are running a business and they interact with our sales dealers. They interact with all the teams at HQ. They interact, and with this job that they're, you know, caring for, and there's could be hundreds or thousands depending on the location, the pipeline, like they're the one that's responsible for catching the ball. It all kind of comes out in the wash when it gets to the branch, and they have to solve those problems and go get it installed every day. And it is a very special thing. And when that branch, you know, all the people, because it's not one person.
Yeah.
You know, it's the warehouse manager, it's the permit coordinator, it's the branch coordinator, it's the production manager, you know, it's the warehouse clerk who's staying late. It's the crew leads getting back, parking in the right spot, letting people know, hey, here's what I need. It's everybody kind of working together. And when that really starts clicking in a place, you go there and you can like feel it. Like there's certain branches you go to and you're like, man, I have energy just from being here.
Yeah.
Like this place just feel, everybody's communicating well. Everybody's talking, you know, and like things happen. Like it is branch manager is one of the only roles I know of that when it like rains for 3 days in a row, you're doing a bad job. You know, and you have to like deal with outside factors, and like that's hard. And but when those teams know how to work together to deal with the fires and issues that pop up every day, just normal courses of business, even in a perfect conditions, you know, that's when the team's really clicking.
Yeah.
And I think our team is very strong and good at that. And so much of that is the directors. We have the DOs, the directors of operations that are in all the different regions, like the teams that they built and have running. Like each is different, each is unique, and they're all different AHJs, different requirements, different weather challenges, different traffic patterns, different things. But that team like keeps all, I mean, I'm very fortunate to have that team and work with that team, because those people are very critical in terms of just like setting up the processes and running the business too.
So how did we get to this point? I mean, you've been in the industry for a long time. You started out with that small local company and then got into installation in Colorado. You eventually moved to the Northeast, right? You joined with Solar City and then Tesla. You know, 16 years later, are you just doing things that you've been doing from previous companies? Is this just like something you've already done before? It seems like there's a lot of innovation and disruption to the way things used to be done as well. Is there a combination of the two?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there is like a, every different market has its own things that happen over time. And we talk a lot here about disruption, and we talk a lot about like, you know, embracing change. And we say a lot on the ops team, and some people might roll their eyes when I say this, but we talk a lot about grandma's ham.
Yep.
That's a big thing we talk about.
Like when your grandma cuts the ham up because it doesn't fit in the oven.
Yeah, it's the story of a boy or a child who asks a parent, hey, why do you always cut the ends off the ham? And the parent's like, oh, I don't know. It's the way my mom always did it. Let's call and ask her. Let's call grandma. And then they call grandma. Grandma's like, I don't know. That's the way my mom always did it. Let's call great-grandma. And they call great-grandma, and she's like, well, that's the only way it would fit into my pan. And everywhere has that, right? We're like, that's not a freedom thing. That's any organization in any place ever. And if like a system that worked really well 6 months ago might not work today because, you know, there's 10 more crews, or because there's 10 less crews, or because, you know, the interconnection process changed, or like so many. And if you're not constantly evaluating it, like I said, we're not perfect. But I think what we're good at doing is asking ourselves, like, is this the best way to do this? And should we improve this process? And so I don't have like a playbook. People get into these roles, like when someone becomes a branch manager at DO, like there's not a handbook you can give them, because a lot of it, some of it's, I think, you know, innate and like how you react to situations. And I think the best quality of a leader is like doing the right thing when no one's looking.
Yep.
Right. Being never sweeping anything under the rug, being not being too proud to ask for help. Like those are really important things. And like doing the right thing for the employee and the customer and the company, which is sometimes holding people accountable. You know, there's so much that goes into that, but I think, you know, a lot of it's learned too. And so sometimes you have to go through those experiences and do some of those things to get really sharp at things. And so, yeah, I've just kind of been on the roller coaster, and with the company I was in Colorado working for before I moved back home to Atlanta, where I did a bunch of commercial and utility scale work. I sold residential solar for about 6 months. That was a little stop on my journey.
Wait, you sold solar?
I sold, yeah. It's not, don't talk about it a ton. I sold not a lot of deals.
But Danny Rubin.
I wouldn't say I was super successful at it, but I sold.
Danny Rubin has sold solar.
I did.
And you've installed solar.
I have.
That makes so much sense.
Honestly, I wasn't great at either of them. Now I think about it, but the sales piece, I mean, this was a long time ago. This was like 2008.
Yeah.
And so it was a much different process. And I eventually, for other reasons outside of that, it wasn't the right thing for me. I moved back to Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm from. And I worked for a developer. We were an EPC who built anything from like 5K to 5 megawatts. So I did a ton of small, medium commercial,
yeah,
some utility scale stuff. And then eventually went to go work for Solar City, for Brian Engelsayer specifically in New Jersey, and bounced around there, ran a region in the Northeast for a long time, and was able to work with some really awesome people, and left. So Solar City obviously was acquired by Tesla, was at Tesla for a little bit, and then left, worked for a geothermal startup based in New York City, which was really cool, and was happy there, but was recruited by these, you know, this crazy group of people in Temecula, California. And like, I came out as like undercover boss and like checked it out for a week. And I remember meeting you.
Yep.
And I met Amanda, who's in the room, and, you know, Zach and Bloom from the dev team, and like a lot of people here. And I was, I just missed solar.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was cool taking a little break. It was like a year and a half, and kind of looking at the industry from the outside. And I missed it. I missed the pace. I missed the tangible excitement a customer gets when their system turns on. I missed like a lot of things about it. And when I was outside the industry, I saw this like world of sales dealers really evolving. And those groups, like there are still companies that have W-2 salespeople who go out and install, and they work at the same company as the ops people. And, you know, there's some great companies doing it that way. But there's this whole lane for somebody to come in and be the best construction company for the people who just focus on selling.
Right.
And I saw what kind of, you know, Brian Engelsayer had joined here, and Brian and Brett were recruiting me, and it just kind of all made sense.
Yeah.
And so I hopped on board.
I remember when I first met you and I was like, we got to get this guy.
I appreciate that.
And maybe now it all makes sense, because, you know, you spoke my language, and it's because you had sold in the past. So, but yeah, like you guys really have kind of just created, I set a whole new standard for quality, safety, and scalability. Like what we're doing is not simple. It's not easy. What drives you to become continually better and better and better? It seems like you guys are operating at a level that nobody else is at. Why not be content at that point?
I think there's some really great people out there doing this thing, to be clear. It's like a sport. Like, I'm just a fan of the sport, and I like team building. I like the competitive nature of, like, not so much us against them, like us against other companies. I like the us against us.
Yeah.
I'm the guy like grabbing the popcorn and sitting back, like, you know, when, you know, branch managers are kind of flexing on who's going to win the belt or the cup. You know, next time I have the highest performing crew. Like,
yeah.
I love that stuff. I love when we run a contest for, you know, like this unique metric, and people like digging into each other's things and being like, this job shouldn't count. Like, I'm like, that's like my reality TV. I'm just like,
Yeah.
Just like stirring the pot, poking a little bit. Like I love that stuff. And it's just fun. Like I think more than anything though, like I just care about the planet.
Yeah.
I just care about the environment. I just like the thing that brought me into solar in, 2007, was like, I wanted to do something that benefited the environment. I've always been super into spending time outdoors. I do a lot of skiing and snowboarding. I go fishing a lot. I do a ton of hiking. Like those are the things I love to do. And when you do those kind of things a lot, you notice changes. You notice, declining fisheries. You notice shorter winters. You notice, the impact that, things are having on the planet. And like that was still something up for debate in 2007, where I feel like, yep, it's not anymore, which is great, but we still have a lot of work to do. And so there's people like solar won't be successful if people are doing it the wrong way. And there's always going to be people sprouting out a company, raising a bunch of outside capital and trying to make a quick buck and promising people things. And it's bad for the customers if they're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Installing to a certain quality. It's bad for the employees because, they could move or relocate or, buy a house or a car, or like, and then all of a sudden they don't have that paycheck anymore. It's bad. And I think we're just trying to do it in a better way. That's like, there's always going to be this seasonality in the industry, but we try to keep it as stable as possible.
Right. There are a lot of good companies and a lot of, I don't want to downplay the rest of the industry, but we're seeing it. Like California, they're making all these changes to the way solar is being done. And there's regulation that's coming from a lot of different legislations. And it's because there's a lot of companies that are just not doing things the right way. They're not taking care of the customer. They're not, there's a lot of money to be made in solar. And so it's one of those, you're helping the environment and you're lining your pockets.
Yeah.
And so that's fine. But I just think that there's just too much greed out there that they are, this industry has been ripe for regulation. We've talked about this on this podcast before. And so it just takes, not just at the CEO level, but down at the ground floor, at every part of the company, to have that same sort of mindset that you have about, we got to take care of the customer. And yes, this is great for the environment. And there's this overall, good feeling about what we're doing. But there is a dark side to this business that I think, needs to change.
The environmental impact you can have as a group, as a team, doing it the right way. Like, yeah, that's it. Like, I hear Brett talk about like why we need to do this. And like, that's part of the reason why I came here. Like the industry kind of lost the visionaries and the people who really gave a crap about what we're doing.
Yeah.
And it became more about going public and balancing, whatever Wall Street's interests were for that quarter, and, raising capital so we can do the next thing. And like, our goal is to install a lot of solar, offer a competitive price to customers, be able to make solar financially equitable and competitive in all states in the country. And that takes a lot of work.
It just seems like there's this different culture, this different feeling, is energy, right? Especially on the ops side. Like, you guys have this mindset of like, we do the hard things.
Yeah.
We install in the snow. We go out when it's, not ideal circumstances, and totally, we do the difficult things.
Totally. You can talk about how bad something is or how great it is. Mm-hmm. And so whether you're in Arizona in the dead of summer and you the crews start super early because by midday, your shoes will melt on the roof. Or, in Chicago or Massachusetts in the dead of winter when, we're monitoring the weather of like for frostbite, you have challenges. Every region has that. But I think people should be proud of the place they install and the things they do. And I think the cool thing about our culture is, a crew from Texas will go to Chicago in the winter.
Yeah.
And they're proud to have done that. And it's hard for them.
Oh, yeah.
The solar coaster is real. And there will be ups and downs. And we're very good at shifting capacity and offering travel opportunities for people across the country. And some crews have really taken advantage of that and seen so many different parts of this country. going to install in California, or going to install, you know, in Chicago, or going to install in Florida, and getting to kind of check it out. And then the team that does it the most, I think, like, you know, the sales team interacts with probably the most, that I think deserves a ton of credit and are kind of the unsung heroes of what we all do, is the site survey group.
Yep.
The site surveyors are incredible.
Yeah. Like we don't talk about them enough.
They're that good. I always love putting install and survey groups together to talk and work things out, because I think a lot of times every group will be like, oh, that was a surveyor's fault. The surveyor just records the information and documents it.
Right.
And some companies don't do that anymore, whether they are virtual or drones or whatever. Like, yep. There is a lot of value in boots on the roof surveys. We send somebody to make sure this project can be installed before we get there. And doesn't always, sometimes, you know, the crew is very often still having to work through challenges that might arise as you start pulling the shingles up or when you open up the panel. Like, there's things that will still pop up, but our site survey group is unbelievable. They shift all over the country with changing capacity. They get our surveys done in a very timely manner, and they do it very well and very safely. And Josh Buck and all the regional survey supervisors across the country do such a great job balancing that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought them up, because they do blow my mind. We're always flying them all over the country, and they're always getting on people's roofs and doing the same thing over and over and over, and they do it very well.
It is a big secret to our, you know, success here, is like, a lot of people have ran away from the survey, and we've just embraced being better at scheduling it, providing the right tools for the sales team to schedule it, mm-hmm. having the right people in the roles. And the other one that sticks out for me is like the service teams. So yeah. Dustin's team, John Kelly, like the teams that, you know, after a system is PTO'd, like we have a monster in the basement that we're growing and is ready to burst out, right? Like,
yeah.
Every single day, our fleet of systems that are in the field operating, producing power grows.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of challenges I've seen from other companies with, you know, monitoring and response times. Yep. And if there's a manufacturing issue and you have to do a lot of RMAs, like working with the manufacturers to do that. And our team is very good at that. They watch their, you know, their tickets very closely. They watch their timelines for customers very closely. They move capacity around the same as a survey group.
It's this brilliant, complex machine that I'm just like blown away and amazed by it. The fact that it works as well as it does. And it's just been cool to be a part of it. It's been fun. And thank you, man. Thank you for joining Freedom. Thank you for your commitment. And it's just an honor to work with you.
I appreciate it. I mean, thank you. Like, we don't exist without projects.
Yeah.
Like, we don't go survey a job if somebody doesn't sell it. We don't go to install it. We don't design it. We don't get the materials in the warehouse. We don't buy the truck. We don't, you know, do all those things. And the teams of people that sell for us are also the best in the industry. And the success, you know, of one is the success of all, right? Like, I appreciate kind of the approach you guys have. I like this. We're like building each other up right now.
Yeah.
Positive affirmations.
We'll take it.
Chat.
Hey, that's how we start.
That's how we start calls. Let's not talk about it on the podcast. Chat.
What are some of the obstacles that are in front of us that what are the things that keep you up at night that would impede us from being able to hit our goals in the future?
A couple things. It's how well we're installing the systems. When we look back after this summer, are we going to be proud of all the work that we did? Are we going to be proud of like what is the percentage of, you know, liable roof leaks? How many systems failed inspection? Like, those are the things that are really important. Most importantly is like, how safe were we? Like, did people get hurt? Were there serious injuries? Like, were they preventable? Was it, you know, someone made the wrong choice, but they had all the things in place because, you know, you rely on someone making that choice. And then like, how well we're communicating across the company. Are we thinking about the grandma's hams that we haven't, you know, that haven't been baked yet? Because a lot of the audience for this, I feel like, is internal. It's like, going to a branch. Like, we have branches all over the country. The majority of people who work outside of the branch, live near one.
Yep.
If you want to go to one and grab a desk for a day and just hang out and kind of get a feel for what it is that we do when we go out and we deliver the product to the customer, you are more than welcome to do that. And that is something everyone is invited to do. Go to a toolbox talk on Wednesday and listen to what a branch manager is talking about in terms of safety and quality. You know, you don't have to show up with donuts or coffee or bagels or anything. You just show up.
Yeah.
And I think like that's the thing too, is like we can't get any our own way. We have to continue to work together. We have to continue to always have that open. I think we do a really great job at that. But having like been a part of high growth, right, in the past, yeah, like that's the thing you always have to be watching out for. And what I love about Freedom is we don't have those silos, right? If there's something going on with field ops, like anyone can pick up the phone and call me. If something's going on with sales, anyone can pick up the phone and call you.
Yep.
Brett's in the mix on, Brian's in the mix on so many things.
Yep.
And when we're doing something new, we bring that group of people together that are the stakeholders. And we have to always continue to make sure that we're all operating, you know, in the same direction. We're not, no one's rowing in different directions from each other. And I think we're doing an amazing job at that, but we have to stay focused on that too.
Is there a number? Is there a milestone? What is it that you're reaching for? Is there something that you're trying to achieve aside from changing the environment and the working with the people that you love working with? Is there a number? Is there a benchmark there?
I want to install a gigawatt in a year.
In a year?
Yeah.
Okay. One gigawatt, 1,000 megawatts.
1,000 megawatts, 1 gigawatt. And we're, you know, I think we're clearly on the path to do that. But I think that's the big milestone that we need to be celebrating. When we can install a gigawatt and be truly proud of it, which we're not going to do it until that, right? We're not going to do it before it's the right time for us to do it, till our systems are in place and it's, you know, everything we need to get there. Because what worked for 300 megawatts might not work for 500, and work for 500 might not work for 750.
Has anybody ever installed a gigawatt in a year?
I don't think so. I think we were close.
At Solar City.
At Solar City. Yeah. And I think it gets, you know, when you look at residential only, there's a lot of uniqueness to when people report how much they're installing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm passionate about that, but, you can put your finger on the scale a few different ways, and you can look at it as total deployments, including subcontracted work, commercial work. You can look at it as you include the storage aggregate. You can do all these things. But when it comes to like in-house crews who work at a company going out to build residential projects, I don't believe that's ever been done.
Yeah, the way a lot of other companies calculate their megawatts is its own podcast episode, right? Like megawatts deployed.
We'll do that
plus
one
plus panels and modules sold plus financed. Yeah. Yeah. So you go on Rogan for that?
We will.
Okay. His name is Danny Rubin. He is the VP of Field Ops for Freedom Forever. He has been instrumental in our growth, and even more importantly, in our quality, our safety, our success, and our overall culture. So Danny, thank you so much for joining, and we will see you guys on the next episode.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.